This a play on word warehouse?
It is. my dad made that up. Okay. So yeah, guys, we're actually in the warehouse now. So welcome to the warehouse, a home for and headquarters for production. So we're going to be talking about our honest review of the Joker. As you can see, we have our DC Gotham paraphernalia on. And we're going to put where Joaquin Phoenix's and Todd Phillips's Joker into perspective culturally, but also in the DC, you know, cinematic universe.
And it's a spoiler review.
Oh, yes. Thank you, Mike. So spoilers, you know, spoiler warnings, obviously. For whatever reason, I think people are deluding themselves if they click on a video or a podcast that says, you know, movie review of a movie that's recent.
Right.
And it's over, let's say, over 10 minutes.
Right.
Obviously, they're going to go into the nitty gritty of the film.
So. I definitely agree. But they still get mad for some reason if you don't put spoiler alerts.
Exactly. And then sometimes they still get mad even if you do put spoiler alerts.
This is true.
So this is one of those things. Guys, personal responsibility, you know.
Right. So I guess I'm the hero and you're the villain now because I'm Batman.
I would love to be the villain. That would be so much fun. Okay. Why so serious, Mike?
We'll see. So, yeah, Joker, which we're going to start with, was I seen it opening weekend.
How were the crowds?
The crowd opening weekend it wasn't actually packed in my theater, but they all loved the movie. Mm-hmm. They stood, you know, up after the movie and kind of stayed for a little bit. So, you know, they like really, really enjoyed it. It was one of those movies where it just kept you, as much as it lacked big fireworks and CG explosions, it still kept you riveted throughout the entire movie.
1,000%. And you said the budget was what, 70 million?
Budget was 70 to 75 million. And now it's made over 800 million. I think 850 ups towards. And
is that worldwide or just America?
That's worldwide.
Okay.
But that's still amazing.
Sure.
And it hasn't even opened in China, which is one of the biggest markets for movies in the entire world.
1,000%, yeah.
Right. And because they're not sure how that type of movie will really play in China. However, to make that much without a China opening is amazing on that budget. So in the movie world, if you take what you take your budget for the movie, and then you take your marketing expense, so that they actually marketed more than they budgeted for the movie. So they used like $100 million in marketing.
That sounds about right. All right. So for me, I have a marketing mindset, so I include that in the budget.
Okay.
So, let's call it $170 million budget.
Okay, we can do that
because the marketing is the major aspect because that's what separates, let's say, indie media
right
from mainstream media, is that marketing budget.
Okay.
So remember when The Dark Knight was coming out, they spent like $200 million on the marketing aspect.
Yes.
Or when remember when Spectre came out, the James Bond film, remember they had the posters on the all public transportation.
Right.
All over the world, they had it on Heineken bottles.
Right.
So there's a massive push for that type of marketing. So I always include that in that, because that raises awareness. It's similar in the music industry. If you're a mainstream artist, you got to get your plays on the radio or else it's not going to explode.
I agree. So overall budget, let's say 175.
Mm-hmm.
So for a movie, you want to make 2 to 3 times your overall budget mm-hmm. to be a successful movie.
Right.
This is made 4 times that. Oh, plus. So it's amazingly successful.
And I'll be honest, as a DC fan, DC really needed this.
Right.
In a massive way.
Also the top grossing DC movie of all time. Also the highest grossing R-rated movie of all time.
Right. So that was the main part that really impressed me. For a comic book movie that isn't Deadpool, that's rated R, that actually has a massive amount of substance to it.
Right.
And to have this type of effect, that's profound.
Oh, I think it is. I think it touches so many different areas when you watch the movie. And now it's like this race to can it make $1 billion, which it doesn't have to.
Right.
But
I mean, like you said, with China.
Right. It may or may not do that. And when I say it touched so many different areas, you know, it's the comic book fan, just the Joker fan itself, the mental health field.
Absolutely.
Because of what was going on, and, you know, in the movie. Mm-hmm. The police in the movie, the relationship with his mother. There's so many different aspects. And then just a struggling guy trying to do something with his life and be a comic and how they treated him.
Right.
So, you know, go so many areas. So my overall review, I'll start my review, spoiler alert, once again, was even though the movie's called Joker, in my opinion, he didn't actually become Joker until the last 15 minutes of the movie.
Yeah, I would say last 10, but yeah.
Okay. So it's a story about Arthur Fleck to me, but the story was amazing.
True.
You know, overall. Some of those concepts, even though it was set in the early 80s, mm-hmm. the movie, are still going on today. There's still people struggling to get insurance who have mental health issues, getting turned away because they don't have the right type of insurance, but still needing the type of help that they need.
And what really worried me in terms of, let's call it predictive programming, is the fact that the massive wage gap, or not wage gap, that actual gap between the wealthy and the poor.
Right.
And each, you know, opposing side's view on that reality.
Right. Which is always, what's been a big deal since the inception of the United States.
Right.
And then the whole aspect of how they treat people who have those type of disabilities and not, you know, helping them in certain ways. And you watch that, so you kind of watch him unravel. And it's crazy because we watch it from a guy, I don't know, his 40s, I guess?
Probably.
I would say. But what else happened throughout his entire life that we even missed? So when they say he got to the point where it made him go, quote unquote, crazy, but we don't know what else happened. So, you know, more built up to that. So even though the events we saw were very traumatizing, imagine what more he went through to finally get to that point.
It's true. Like you said, it's the story of Arthur Fleck. And we actually learn at the end of the movie, like we said, spoiler alert, if, you know, in case, we learn about his mental health history as well as his mother's mental health history. So like you said, a lot of the themes going on in the film actually going on in real life. So his mom was diagnosed with being delusional,
right,
and narcissism.
Right.
And if you, unfortunately, if you think about a lot, and this is why it got negative reviews because of the, you know, the mainstream, let's say, feminist media.
Right.
Is because it actually put the responsibility on women.
Right.
And you have a lot of women who are narcissistic and delusional, especially in our generation of millennials. We're trained to be narcissistic and we're also trained to be delusional. So that's what's going to happen. All that is going to be inherited by children. So unless you're a really conscious individual, you're going to keep your family, your bloodline is going to inherit that into the future, which is why mental health is usually hereditary.
I agree with that. At the meat of what you're saying,
mm-hmm.
the hereditary aspect of mental health and also passing some of your traits along to your children. I definitely agree with that 100%. And going back to the film, you see that, you know, you can actually really see it developing early in the film. But then they kind of put it all out there about her history and that he didn't know.
And to be fair to Mrs. Fleck, we don't know if that's doctored or not by Mr. Wayne.
By Mr. Wayne, who was the most powerful person in all of Gotham.
Which is consistent, so I appreciate that, you know, DC comic book aspect of the film.
Right, exactly, which is, spoiler alert, so the movie has Thomas Wayne, Bruce Wayne's father in the movie, as a very powerful individual, and Bruce Wayne is, I would say, 9 or 10 years old, maybe 11 or 12, in the movie. So you start to see those early aspects of how big Wayne Enterprise really was and how powerful the whole Wayne family was in Gotham, even before Bruce took over the mantle. Also, a younger Alfred in the movie,
right,
taking care of Bruce, as he always has throughout. And with the mother, besides the diagnosis, which we are not sure is valid or not, Within that diagnosis, you also read some things that still happen today too, where the mother apparently had a boyfriend or husband who was very abusive to Arthur.
Physically and emotionally and physically, as well as the mother as well.
Exactly. And more like the mother kind of let it happen, I guess, so to speak, to the point where they took him away and things of that nature. And these are still, again, some concepts you see happening where women are in certain relationships.
And here's the thing. In terms of personal responsibility, right? If you, and it could be both men or women.
Right.
If you have a child before a relationship and that child, you bring that child around someone else who isn't beneficial for that child, it's your responsibility as the parent. However, if you're, let's say, insecure enough to be like, okay, I'm just going to tolerate that because I just want to be with someone, which apparently this is what the file said.
Right.
So, I mean, that's, I mean, Mrs. Fleck, I mean, come on.
Yeah, ultimately, you're the protector of your child at all times.
Right.
So you have to protect them no matter who else is hurting them in any type of way. And, you know, once you have a child, they become your number one thing to protect over anything. So, you know, so again, that's just another concept from a movie depicted in the early 80s, which is always going on. So this is why even when it's a period film, so to speak,
right,
people can watch it and still relate. Because they're not period-sensitive concepts. They're still going on today.
Exactly.
I know certain people, like Jazz. Mm-hmm. Shout out to Jazz and the new you, as always. But I know certain people, like Jazz, who don't like period films, period. Because they feel like they want to see all the new. Hmm. And they feel like that the period films will show them things that aren't going on today, so why am I watching it? But this didn't have that. And also, they showed some realism. You know, some of those events, even though it wasn't Gotham, which is quote-unquote New York City, right? With the garbage strike, that actually happened.
Right.
I don't know if you knew or not, but, you know, that actually happened at one point where there were rats running around because there was so much garbage in the streets because there was a garbage man strike. And, you know, I was born in 1984, so, you know, I'm a lot younger than this movie, you know, took place in. However, I couldn't imagine a garbage strike, you know, and for weeks and months where you're still accumulating garbage, but no one's picking it up.
Right.
You know, and how, but it's interesting how that event, like when it first takes place, not just in the movie, but even if it happened in real life, you probably wouldn't think it would have an effect on you. But then I start to think, I just was walking around garbage for months, you know, and the smells and the rats. How mentally could that affect your overall being, you know, staying positive or happy, you know, things of that nature?
It's true. And the human brain is a magnificent, you know, vessel of information and productivity. And our brains are designed to acclimate itself to whatever the surroundings. So like you said, people are getting used to garbage and rats being on the street. And that's not really a healthy habitat for any human beings to live in.
Right. So again, something like that, and I think that was a backdrop to show not just Arthur, but the city and how inevitably, you know, it was going to crash and burn, you know. So, again, by Todd Phillips, that was amazing, and the writing and the screenplay and all of it. I thought the buildup of everything was good. I thought the pacing was good. And even though Joaquin's in literally every frame of the movie, I never got tired of Joaquin.
It's true, because like you said in the beginning, you're on the edge of your seat all the time because you know where this tale is leading. Like, okay, each action literally that we're seeing is going to lead him to become the Joker. And then, as you said before, first the kids take a sign and then he gets beat up and jumped.
Right.
So like you said, all that trauma before, and then we see the trauma like, damn, this right. happened to you too?
Right.
And then after that, damn, this right. happened to you too?
Right. And then, you know, he gets fired from the job he loves as being a clown and making people. Because ultimately, I think he wanted to make people, he wanted to entertain people. And he wanted to make people laugh, which is why he loved the late night TV show. He wanted to be the host of the show.
Shout out to Murray and Robert De Niro.
Shout out, definitely. So, you know, yeah, like you said, seeing all that trauma develop and seeing where he goes with it. Like, again, the pacing was good. I thought Zazie Beetz as his pseudo love interest was good. And I say pseudo because we learned that it was all delusion.
What we learned a lot was delusion, which was an interesting aspect of Todd Phillips' representation of the Joker. So him going on Murray in the beginning was an illusion.
Right.
Him having the love interest and having it develop, her being there by his side when his mother's in the hospital was all right. manufactured in his imagination in a very Secret Life of Walter Mitty way. You know how we all, or kind of like the cartoon Doug.
Right.
When you have the imagination that, oh, you're Quail Man, and you're actually doing X, Y, and Z, but actually you're just, you know, Doug, or in this case, Arthur.
Right, yeah. Even her at the comedy club laughing at his jokes and things of that nature. It was just a lot. And that part, that actually blew my mind when they actually showed that she was never really there all that time. And I thought that part, from there on, I was like, this is a great, great movie, because I never really saw that.
1,000%, and that actually showed the parallels between our world now and, let's say, the 1980s world where that film takes place. Because before, that video would be viral on things like Ridiculousness or Tosh.0, but in this case, back in those days, it would be on a late night show like Murray.
Right.
So that's how it got popular, and then you had all, you know, it went viral for the negative reasons, but it still went viral in that essence.
Right. And, you know, And also, there was not as much as a sensitivity as there is today.
Right.
So to just, like, constantly put someone on a late-night talk show and ridicule them was accepted at that time, where right now it might be considered, you know, a form of bullying, you know, in today's world.
Especially with the mental health aspect.
Exactly, with that aspect. So when he... finally became, well, I'm skipping too far ahead. So when the guy who he worked with, the big guy, I forget his name right now. However, when he wound up killing this guy in his apartment, and that was a great scene.
The clown who gave him the gun.
It was a coworker of his. He gave him a gun to protect himself after he got beat up by the kids.
And then also sold him out, too, when it happened.
When I got beat up by the kids. Then Arthur doing a job at a hospital in front of kids, which is, oh, my God. Again, this is the tale of the time. Drops the gun while he's performing for these kids. And then all they do is they call his boss, which is amazing to me. And he winds up getting fired. And the guy who sold him the gun, did you get his name?
Randall.
Randall. It doesn't take the blame and sold him out, as Josh said, as if he didn't give him the gun in the first place. And then when the cops find out about the gun, they go to Randall at the office, start asking about the gun. Him trying to protect himself goes to Arthur's house.
With Gary.
With Gary. Who's a diminutive clown as well. And Arthur decides, you know what? You never liked me. You sold me out. I'm at a point now where I just don't care. And he kills him.
And this is after he killed his mother.
This is after he killed his mother.
So spoiler again.
All the spoilers alerts are out there. But that scene I'm referring to in particular because Gary, who was always nice to him, who I think kind of looked at him almost as an equal because Arthur had the mental issues, but Gary had the diminutive stature.
Right.
So they were both struggling in life. And I think they looked at each other like we're both having issues, so we both are equal.
Authentic empathy, absolutely.
So Arthur, who's at this point, you know, just doesn't care, actually lets Gary go. And I thought it was a great moment. Because not only are you letting the person go, but it's a potential witness and you murdering someone. And you're like, you know what? He was a good guy. I'm just going to let him go. And I thought that was a great moment to me.
It's true. And it kind of shows Arthur's moral compass, which I think is consistent, to be fair. And the element that led him to, executing Murray on his own show was the simple fact that Murray simply lacked that empathy, which he talked about right before he, you know, blew his brains out.
Right.
And the same thing that Thomas Wayne and the Elite represent versus, you know, the clowns of Gotham, if you will.
Yeah, and that's also interesting because if you think about this whole Thomas Wayne thing, we always knew Bruce and Alfred, and we knew the Wayne Manor and Wayne Enterprise and that he had all this money. But we never knew, like, one, how did Thomas really come upon all this money? And also, you know, never knew how his father really was as an individual in that elite, you know, manner. Because you see all these bad parts of Gotham, the Narrows and, you know, other parts of Gotham. If you know Gotham and Batman, you know what I'm talking about.
Especially the Arkham area.
Right, and the Arkham area, Arkham Asylum, the all of it. So you never realize, like, because Bruce is for the most part, an upstanding individual, right? But you never knew, like, where his father, how his father was.
And what's interesting, we actually get to see how Batman's origins are in this portrayal of Gotham.
Yes.
Where it's Joker's revolution that creates Bruce Wayne. And in other aspects, it's, you know, it's Batman that creates the Joker.
Right. But it's, you know what's amazing about that is that we saw the scene, which we've seen now 100 times, right? Where his mother and father get killed after the show in the alley. The pearls fall, right? And right in front of Bruce.
Exactly.
Which is the origin of quote-unquote Batman at a young age. But we've seen that scene. We saw it in Batman 1989, right? Where it was the Joker or a young...
Jack Napier.
Jack Napier.
Played by Jack, so shout out to Jack.
Shout out to Jack Nicholson. Jack Napier, who did it, and several other movies, but and that crime, you know, led him to being Batman. Mm-hmm. But if we think about this film, and while the guy who wound up shooting them shot him, it's all the stuff that was going on in Gotham before that, and also the struggle between the elite and the poor. So when Jack Napier did it, right, was that the same struggle? Another movies with that struggle going on, we just don't know.
Right.
So we always took the side of Bruce, I guess, and just said this criminal killed his parents. But it's like this background which we never knew, and I feel like this movie kind of fills it in a little bit.
That's fair to say. I would say in Gotham specifically, it's always been designed to have that let's say class battle with the extremely wealthy versus the, you know, extremely impoverished. Because they're forced to go to crime because, you know, nothing, let's say things aren't set up. As we saw in this Joker film, social services budgets were being cut, which is actually happening now with the current president in the White House, which is interesting.
100%. Now, and I'll let you go on your whole review in a second. So now, the people who don't like the movie for certain reasons.
I haven't actually heard any, I mean, besides... For the fact of how it highlights, let's
violence.
Say, well, not violence, violence specifically against his mother. So that's the only negativity I heard.
Okay. I heard some aspects about the violence itself.
Okay.
Even though it's not really a lot of violence, but there's some violence. I heard some aspects about, you know, the shooting on live TV of Murray. And a person, people being afraid that somebody might copycat or mimic this.
Now, again, that's why I said predictive programming. That's the thing that also worries me as well. Because, again, when people see it in the films or hear it in music, then they tend to act it out in real life.
Right. And then there's the people who are huge comic book Batman / Joker fans.
Okay.
And their response negatively was that they're going to see a Joker film and they know the character, the Joker. And there's an aspect of the Joker where he's always one step ahead, where he's very smart and cunning, as well as having this being, you know, quote unquote insane and having that personality. And Arthur seems a little bit more of a aloof, right? and doesn't have that type of smartness that you see in other Jokers, and that they were upset about. They were okay with the, you know, the laugh, the and sanity that ultimately develop. But that part, you don't see it, and you don't see it, you know, like this will become him in the future in any way.
That's interesting, because I actually felt the complete opposite.
Okay.
So at the beginning of the film, like let's say the first half an hour to hour of the film, I agree with that completely. Because I looked at Arthur Fleck like Oswald Cobblepot. Like, are you kidding me? Who is this guy? However, right. When you actually think about the Joker, and like you said, thinking like 80 steps ahead.
Right.
This is the essence of being a comedian, because you have to lead your audience up to the joke.
Right.
So when he went on Murray, he was already, let's say he's already snapped at that point. Okay. So when he's going on the Murray, he already went on knowing he's going to have the knock-knock joke, even though in his mind he was going to do it to himself. And then at the end of the, you know, at the end of the segment, you see that he actually does it to Murray.
Right.
So he already had that thought up. He had that thought up in his plan. That was going to happen. So you would think he would use that as leverage to with his comedian career, but he actually wanted to make his own, let's say, political statement at that time. So that was always going to be his goal. So you can, for me, I can actually see him being more proactive in that type of thinking, which will lead him to becoming a, let's say, a mastermind like the Joker.
I can see that, actually. You know, I didn't even look at it from that aspect. And I didn't agree overall anyway, because I thought some of the things he did were smart and right. thought out. I thought the scene actually where he's able to dit Thomas Wayne in a bathroom by himself, how many people in Gotham could even say they were able to do that?
And walk up on Wayne Manor and have a chat with young Master Bruce alone?
All right.
How is that even possible?
Right.
Like, Alfred, that's literally your job. What are you doing?
Yeah, one job. Like, what are you doing?
And you're a mercenary. Like, how, come on. And how is it that easy to walk up upon Wayne Manor when you have all the consultants in the world in terms of security to prevent something like that happening from someone deranged?
Right. And Thomas Wayne in a bathroom by itself was amazing to me, because not only was he powerful and rich, he also had political aspects. And if you know politics, any person wants to get political aspects, they start to have massive security, you know, around them.
Wherever you go.
So the fact that he was able to have a full-on conversation with him, and that he snuck past, like, the police barricades, like, that showed me there is some cunning and guile that he has.
Oh, yeah.
You know, already. And then if you watch, he accomplished things in the movie. He was able to get medical records from a mental institute. Who can get that, you know, from his mother and walk away with them?
Well, to be fair, I think the way he went about it was probably the only way he could go about it, because it is his mother. So he was, entitled to hear some of it, or hear that it exists, the file exists. But however, he didn't, you know, he just grabbed it and ran. It's not like he, you know.
I mean, I guess, but I mean, okay, I guess maybe I got to think about the movie from the time period. Because right now, if I walked up to a mental institute and said, can I hear my mother's records? They're not going to give it to me.
Well, it depends on the condition of your mother as well. Because at that time, I would say that Penny Fleck was not in the mental acuity to even sign a contract to allow her son to have access to the files, simply because legally, if you have any, let's say, faculties missing in your consciousness, that contract is invalid. The signature is invalid. That's the whole aspect of power of attorney.
Right, but she was, first of all, at that time she was in a regular hospital, not the mental hospital. And then secondly, when he went there, the guy, the security guard, or whatever he was, I'm sorry, Brian Tyler Henry, who was a great actor from Atlanta, and I love all his work, by the way, shout out to him. But and with him being a great actor also, I'm happy he was in the movie. I thought he was a little bit underused, though. But that's neither here nor there. However, when he went there, he started to read the records. And as he's reading it, he's like, yo, this is too much. And then he tells him, I can't give you this. You need to come back with some sort of document.
Right.
So if you can't give it to me, you can't read it to me, medically speaking.
Of course.
You know, from my history. So, again, I mean, I guess it wasn't very something that was a huge plan, so to speak. But somehow he got the guy to read him records. That may be because of the time frame, too. So, you know. But besides that, I thought he was smart, and I could see how he can become the Joker and, you know, get smarter and smarter as time goes along. Because if Bruce is only 9 or 10, by the time they would clash, he would have to be Joker for 10, 12 years at least by then. And he'll be developed more, you know, over time.
It's true. And I guess for me, the one aspect that was perhaps too accelerated for me, I guess the one negative aspect that I'll have is how the, let's say, the boiling point of Gotham, I feel like his actions were a direct cause of that, but it didn't feel that way, if that makes sense. So obviously him, again, spoiler alert, killing the Wall Street brokers, the bullies, the Wall Street bullies on the train.
Right.
Right. And then that apparently leading to the thing that unravels society, because then it really, you know, pushes the poor over here and the wealthy over here. Like, OK, now we're actually at odds now over this one incident. But for me, at the same time, from, let's say, from Arthur's point of view, I'm just surprised that he associated that with himself, given his mental ability.
I think that though I think that that was kind of, I guess, the straw that broke the camel's back, so to speak. Sure. I think it just was a microcosm of what was going on throughout the film. So I don't think that's really what pushed him over the edge, but it just was kind of that tipping point. But they were already halfway there. Mm-hmm. And I think it was because they were Wall Street bullies. And so what would be considered quote-unquote elitist, people having money, it calls the poor who are already having issues with the elitists to then come out in drones against them. And then when Thomas, you know, makes a speech about it and calls them, you know, these guys are clowns and all these things, when we're already at odds with you for what's going on in our city, just kind of made things worse. And again, I go back to the garbage strike, which was the elitists against the poor, mm-hmm. and not wanting to pay them their wages or their benefits, which they didn't go into detail with, but I'm assuming it was that. So when you take that and then take these Wall Street guys who are living it up, having a great life, I'm sure their garbage being taken out, right? That's what they're thinking.
We ain't seen the garbage at Wayne Manor.
Right. Exactly. I think that was just kind of the tipping point. Now, Arthur himself, he didn't think about whether they were elitists or not. It was that he was once again being bullied by someone. Mm-hmm. Once again, trying to explain that he has a condition where he laughs uncontrollably, but they're hitting him instead of listening. After he just got fired from his job for having the same gun that we're referring to. And I felt like he felt, I'm going to take the power back at this moment. And initially, you know, they were also attacking a young woman. So they weren't like the greatest guys in the world.
Also, did you notice that when, let's say, the clowns arose, everyone started wearing clown masks? Apparently, the same woman in the subway was also the one in the cab that he smiled at. That was supposed to be a connection.
Oh, really?
I had no idea. Shout out to New Rockstars.
Shout out to New Rockstars.
Eric pointed that out. Shout out to Eric.
Love New Rockstars. I had no idea about that. That's interesting. And so, that makes a lot of sense. So my overall review, because we got a lot to talk about here, I gave it A+. I was riveted. I thought it was a masterpiece. I've called it that before. I'll call it that again. Not necessarily a movie where I would go back and see several times, but very thought-provoking. And just an overall, I left the movie thinking a lot and feeling like this was an amazing film. And I watch a lot of movies, spoiler alerts.
Right. So, and just my own curiosity, a follow-up question to that statement of the review, where do you put Joaquin Phoenix on the Joker Hall of Fame, or let's say Mount Rushmore?
We were talking about from the beginning. So Joaquin Phoenix, I would still say, is second to Heath Ledger. Rest in peace, Heath. And don't get me wrong, Joaquin was amazing, only because in Heath, we saw the full Joker, and which I started with, I'm coming full circle now, to me, he only became the actual Joker within the last 15 minutes of the movie. So Joaquin Phoenix, we saw the evolved evolution of what he will inevitably become, so to speak, with the cunning, the guile, the craziness, the not caring, all of it. The first scene in The Dark Knight in the bank, it just does it for me, right? And that just like sets the whole film off. You know what I'm talking about.
Well, you know, what doesn't kill you simply makes you stranger.
Right. It's just an amazing scene. So, and I recently watched The Dark Knight again, which is, you know, years later, and it holds up, just to let people know.
Which is currently still on Netflix, I believe.
It is.
Right.
It is. Dark Knight and Batman Begins, but not Dark Knight Rises. But it holds up. I saw The Dark Knight 3 times in a movie theater. So
as did I. One in IMAX as well.
I did too. So it holds up. So yeah, not about Dark Knight, but yeah, I think Joaquin will be second. I think then Jack, of course, will be, you know, third in the movie realm. But Joaquin did an amazing job, and you know, I think Todd Phillips as well.
It's true. And if I'm going to just follow up on that point, I still have Heath number one. I have Jack number two, out of respect, and also because of the performance and the congruency. And we see the evolution of the Joker as well in that film as well. And with this one, I think it all depends on what happens next. So whatever the follow-up film is to this, now I'm not sure if they're going to have a movie with Joaquin and Robert Pattinson. I think that would be interesting to see if they're going to collide those worlds. I'm not sure yet, because I know this is in DC Dark, so I know it's a different segment away from the traditional DC universe.
Yeah, I don't think they will, only because even though Robert Pattinson's playing a younger version of Batman,
which they kind of set up with this movie,
but not that young. Robert Pattinson's 33 years old. So
no, I'm saying they can do a time jump.
Right, but if they do a time jump from a 40-something-year-old Joaquin, then how old would Joker be at that point, right? So you got to think about that.
But, you know, the makeup.
The makeup. I don't really see it.
Well, personally. Here's the thing. Joaquin is, I believe, either late 40s or early 50s.
Right.
And like you said, Arthur Fleck is what, late 30s, early 40s?
Yes.
So in terms of film and, you know, camera tricks and whatnot, I think they might be able to, if... Because of the success, as you illustrated before, with simply the numbers, the factual numbers, I think it would behoove DC to get them on the screen together. And we're going to go into this topic at a later date. We're going to talk about what DC can do to actually compete with Marvel.
Okay,
that's going to be a fun one. But yeah, we'll save that for that.
We'll save that for that.
I'm just saying, like, I think there's a possibility. Also, I watched Spider-Man Far From Home last night.
Did you?
For the first time.
Did you?
So
we had to do a ranking, don't we?
Right. Okay. So I did love it. And also I saw the parallels between how they kind of stole a lot from the DC universe in that movie.
Oh, we got to go there.
Yeah, which is interesting.
We got to go there then at some point. Because I'm like, what are you talking about? So
yeah.
You got to watch the new Rockstar video on the how you see throughout the movie Mysterio tricking Spider-Man.
Right.
Because it shows a lot of stuff that I didn't see.
Spoiler.
So I'm going to send you that that video that Eric did a few weeks ago and whatnot. But so yeah, that's my overall review. I'm still going to say A+. What would you say, Josh?
I would definitely say a solid A.
Okay.
Again, immense anticipation. Again, DC, I'm a DC fan, but I have to concede when Marvel has been kicking DC's ass royally for the past decade. Besides The Dark Knight, and that trilogy, for me, it's been very disappointing. It's like being a Manchester United fan right now because we just suck now and everyone else is better than us type of thing. Or like how the Yankees were, like with you and the Lakers. It's like having a massive brand,
right?
With them not, you know, showing up to play, essentially.
I can see that. Yeah, I definitely see that.
So yeah, A rating all the way. And again, the anticipation to see what they do next. So if the next Joker is, if this is going to be a next solo Joker film, that would be interesting. If they're going to do a collaboration with other villains, that would be interesting. And like you said, I just want to see the progress of the Joker, because as we see with film, and unfortunately my other favorite franchise like Star Wars, if you don't have everything connected, then what happened in this film could be meaningless if the next director takes it a different direction, and then his growth and play is totally the trajectory is totally different. So I'm just curious to see what happens next. So this is the Joker's version of Batman Begins. So I'm curious to see what's going to happen next.
So I want to keep it a Joker for a second before we move on to other stuff. So if nothing happens next, this is a standalone Joker film.
Still gets an A.
Okay.
Again, and the numbers speak for themselves.
Right.
So you have to give all credit due Todd Phillips, the whole staff, Joaquin.
Right.
Right? Everybody.
Right. Okay. All right. Gotcha.
Now, in terms of the plot, again, I'm still not sold, unfortunately, on how Thomas Wayne is. That's the only thing. Because he, even in the comics, he wasn't just this wealthy, elite who could be comparable with a modern-day president.
Our modern-day president, yeah.
He had a lot of humanitarian about him. And
yes.
In this film, he's not a doctor yet. He's not Dr. Wayne yet.
But he dies in this film, too. So.
Exactly. So yeah. that congruency. So yeah. Now, again, to show that young Bruce lose his parents in that way, with that context, now I feel like that has to lead into Robert Pattinson's role. Because now you have a Batman character who's... Now he's going to have his own daddy issues because now his dad was like that as opposed to being like that. So in Christopher Nolan, shout out to Christopher Nolan, my favorite director, and Christian Bale and Heath Ledger, that Batman universe, Bruce Wayne is the humanitarian. So Thomas Wayne is the humanitarian. So Bruce has a lot to, let's say, get out of the shadow of his father.
Right.
So even in this case, that's kind of the case because of his wealth. From what he actually did and kind of ensued, or let's say he created by calling people clowns, it's like a bad taste in everyone's mouth. So I don't see any positivity with Thomas Wayne at all, and I don't think that's accurate in terms of comic book wise.
Bro, honestly, I feel for you because I think you're looking way too far ahead.
All right.
I honestly don't think it's going to connect at all. I think this all will right. be a standalone Joker amazing film. I think Matt Reeves has his own vision that he's had for years now.
Nice. But
if you remember, Ben Affleck was supposed to be in the Matt Reeves film at first.
I knew that never was going to happen.
Even though it didn't happen, but either way, that was in development for years. So Matt Reeves has had his own vision before this, which he's going to ultimately do. And I don't think it's going to connect at all. I think this will literally be a standalone Joker film with their Batman origin. But then we'll see Robert Pattinson with his own Batman, origin, so to speak. Similarly, of course, the shooting is always going to be the shooting right in the alleyway. But I think his father will have a different background. And also Matt Reeves, what I'm happy about that is that he's going to play on the detective part of Bruce Wayne or Batman, where in recent films, even down to the Christian Bale one, we don't see as much of that. And if people who don't know, Batman, Bruce Wayne, is known as the world's greatest detective.
So I put Batman in the same category as James Bond and Sherlock Holmes.
Okay.
In terms of being detectives, but also, let's say, action-wise.
Right.
So, but to be fair to the Dark Knight trilogy,
right,
Christian Bale did reverse engineer the bullet, which is some Batman detective tech. So that's why, this is why the Gotham PD always, seek help from Batman the same way that the police always seek help from Sherlock Holmes, because it's above their pay grade. The certain things and certain resources that they have that the local police don't. So for me, I still saw some detective, but I understand what you're saying. We didn't see as much that you would see in, let's say, the Arkham Asylum games that were on, on
right.
Xbox and PS4.
Right. Neither would, Michael Keaton's Batman
right.
going all the way back. And that's a huge aspect of Batman. He started out in Detective Comics, so to speak. So it's funny, cause I have a friend of mine who always gets mad about that, about that title, World's Greatest Detective. He's like, who gave him this title? Like, he gets so mad about it. But I'm like, it is what it is, bro. So he's going to show that aspect more. And then also because He's already casted for Catwoman, already casted for the Riddler, and they're gonna play on the Long Halloween or the Last Halloween. I forget the story it's called in Batman, where it's several villains going on. I think Joaquin is such a force, and the Joker is such a force. I don't see him coming in as part of a huge ensemble.
Okay.
If it were just a Batman versus Joker type of deal, maybe. But I don't see Joaquin, you know, and his choices of roles, just being like, okay, I'll be a part of these all these villains in this movie.
Well, just food for thought, because again, we started with the numbers and the marketing aspect of the business.
Right, right, right.
And how DC, and thus Warner Brothers, does business.
Right.
They love franchises. That's just how they just how they do business.
But Batman will be a franchise. I will see. I see three movies coming out of this Batman.
I definitely see them connecting them. They're the studio who, you know, did Ocean's 11.
Right.
With all those stars.
So, in 2021, when that movie comes out, we're going to play this video before we play a video reviewing that Batman and see who was right.
You may be right, but I think it makes more sense for me to be right.
Okay.
From a business point of view.
We're going to play a snippet from this video right before we review that movie and see who was right.
And if let's say DC and Warner Brothers actually listened to me and did it, would they be in a better position? That's just my question.
I don't necessarily think so. So let's move forward. All right.
And yeah, so thank you guys for watching. And, you know, the next video will be how we rank all the comic book movies of 2019.
Yes, thank you once again. It's Mike signing off.